I'm Andy Bienstock, host for Jazz and Big Band Music here on WYPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make live streams like this one difficult to keep going. Stand up for public media and help fortify WYPR's future. Tell your member of Congress you support WYPR by visiting protectmypublicmedia.org. Thanks.
Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. I'm WYPR's Baltimore County reporter John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall. My guest today is Baltimore County's first ever Inspector General, Kelly Madigan. Baltimore County launched its Office of the Inspector General in January of 2020 in an effort to investigate fraud, waste, and abuse within government. In its short lifespan, the office has been busy. It's filed nearly three dozen reports and garnered a lot of attention for its investigations of members of the county council and the county executive. And in a surprise move, Madigan might soon be out of a job. To talk about it, Madigan joins me here in the studio. Welcome, Kelly.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you here. We have a lot to talk about when it comes to your five-plus years as Baltimore County's first Inspector General, but I want to begin with what's happening right now. On May 12th, you said you had your first meeting with County Executive Kathy Klausmeier, who took over for Johnny Olszewski in January. You said it was cordial, but then at the end, you were handed an envelope with a letter in it, and it said you would have to reapply for your position and that it will be an open process so others can apply as well. And I take it that that was unexpected.
It certainly was unexpected. I had been reaching out to the county executive and her chief of staff since January. I wanted to welcome her aboard, look forward to working with her, and I wanted to just have time on her calendar to talk about me, talk about the office, answer any questions that she might have had. And that meeting originally got scheduled in March, and then it was rescheduled, and so I finally had it in May, and I certainly wasn't expecting to receive the letter.
Now, the county executive points to the county code as requiring her to have this open process. And so what is your read of the code when it comes to your position? Is it clear that the county executive can, in fact, reappoint you rather than opening it up to other applicants?
Well, unfortunately, I'm a lawyer by trade. So while I, am the inspector general 9 to 5, I still kind of have all of my lawyer skills of reading a code. I think it's pretty clear as to how you would be subject to appointment for a second term. It says consistent with A1, and A1 merely states appointed by the county executive and confirmed by county council. That being said, you know, it's for the county attorney or someone else to weigh in on what that those words actually mean. I've been very clear that I love this job. It's been an honor to serve as the first Inspector General for Baltimore County. I'm dedicated to the work and working on behalf of the citizens of Baltimore County, and I have said that I will reapply for the job.
You will. Okay. County Executive Klausmeier has declined requests for interviews on this. Through a spokeswoman, she said she did feel the need to request. She did not feel the need to request legal guidance from the county's Office of Law. As far as you know, has County Attorney James Benjamin weighed in on this? And if not, should he?
Yeah, I don't know whether he has or he hasn't. He's certainly the lawyer for Baltimore County. In the past, when we've issued reports or there's been a question about what the code, the Baltimore County Code, what it does or doesn't say, that's an opportunity for him to weigh in. I mean, if anyone should weigh in on what the code means, what the language requires, it would be Mr. Benjamin and his office.
And have you run it by other attorneys, people you just know?
I haven't, but there certainly have been lots of social media posts and emails that the office has received from lawyers and non-lawyers as to what their interpretation is.
County Councilman Izzy Patoka, a Democrat, was the first member of the county to speak publicly about the need to reappoint you. And I should also add that when the county executive decided to have an open application process rather than reappoint you, I reached out to the seven members of the county council. Six of them said they want you reappointed. That's significant because while Klausmeier makes the nominations up to the county council to eventually confirm. And so I talked to Councilman Patoka, and he said he sent a letter to Klausmeier saying he was extremely concerned about her decision to have an open process. I talked to him about it at that time. He said it was important for him to let Klausmeier know why he thinks what she's doing is a mistake.
Suppose we have a candidate that is unknown to us, that has a steep learning curve in terms of learning the nuances of Baltimore County. County government is complex, and I think Ms. Madigan has done a good job in terms of understanding each county agency, understanding how they work, what their mission is, and then how, if they're working towards their mission, and if there's any improprieties that are taking place. She's really good at uncovering those.
Councilman Wade Catch, a Republican, said he was surprised by Klaus Meyer's decision and that you should be reappointed. And Catch, too, said it's important for Klaus Meyer, who's been in office less than 5 months, to know that.
She needs to be reappointed, without a doubt. She's done an excellent job, and I think for the reputation of the county and for the good of the taxpayers, et cetera, that she needs to be reappointed. I know that the public is on her side. I know that. We want clean, efficient, effective government, and it's important that she be reappointed so that she can continue in that effort.
Councilman David Marks, a Republican, also voiced strong support for your reappointment, but he did say that he thought the county code is a little fuzzy on whether you can just be reappointed or whether it requires an open process. So he says he understands Klaus Meyer's decision.
I think she has a point. The statute says there will be an open search process. So I do understand the county executive's point. It is something the county council should clarify. I don't see any reason why a county executive should not submit a name for reappointment to the county council if they feel that it's the right person.
Marks is considering drafting legislation to clarify the code on reappointing the inspector general. Do you think that that's necessary?
I think the code is very clear, but I would welcome an opportunity to try to make it more clear or more clarifying if the legislative branch thinks that the code can be improved upon. I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that, you know, this is a piece of the code that hasn't really been driven or tested, where other pieces have certainly been subject to review by the Blue Ribbon Commission or you know, other people that have weighed in on how the mechanics of it work.
If you're just joining us, I'm John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall, and my guest is Kelly Madigan, Baltimore County Inspector General. This show was pre-recorded, so we cannot take your calls or your emails. You know, likewise, Councilman Patoka says he plans to try to get a charter amendment on next year's ballot. It would create an independent advisory board that would nominate future attorneys general, as opposed to the current setup where the county executive appoints. Do you support that idea?
I would support the idea. I mean, it's tricky, right? Offices of inspector generals are supposed to be independent. And so what does independent mean? You know, it's not this perfect recipe that you add a little of this and you have it add a dash of that. The law has to be clear that you're independent, which means that you can't have political affiliation. So, but when the person is appointed and confirmed by both branches of government, executive and legislative, that makes it inherently political, which, you know, is a conflict of interest, I think.
Do you know why the county executive is choosing to open up the position to other applicants rather than just reappoint you?
I have no idea. I met her for the first time on May 12th.
And y'all haven't spoken since?
I have not spoken to her since.
Okay. Do you take her at her word that she believes she's required to do it by the code, or is there something else going on?
I have no reason not to take her at her word, mm-hmm. but again, I met her for the first time that Monday afternoon.
Okay. Councilman Patoka told me one of his problems with all of this is the importance of retaining good employees. With your future in the county in jeopardy, are you putting out feelers for another job? Or likewise, are you hearing from prospective employers who might be interested in hiring you?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic. I'm trying to keep a little bit of hope. I love this job. I would love nothing more than to continue in Baltimore County government and give Baltimore County government and its citizens 4 more years of my hard work. But, you know, it's probably good to read the room and start to brush up my resume, maybe draft a cover letter, get a LinkedIn profile. I will say, though, it's a weird position to be in because I'm kind of advocating for myself. But the office has only been in existence for 5 years, really 4 years, because I was hired in January and COVID struck in March. It took probably 10 or 11 months until we really kind of started to get our feet underneath us and issue reports. And I do think it could be disruptive to the county employees. I mean, Baltimore County hasn't had a new agency in a very long time, let alone have an agency like an inspector general's office with compliance. You know, we've done some things. I've spoken at the new employee orientation to try to introduce the concepts of the office and interviews and how you would interact with the office and why you have to cooperate. So if you have a new person in, good or bad, you know, it could be grass is greener, but they might have a different approach. Maybe they issue subpoenas. Maybe they have a different protocol. They change the policies and procedures. And I think that, you know, that's just something to consider, because it's not just the office in existence. It's all of the interactions with the county employees. And I've also been overwhelmed in some of the county employees that have reached out to me just to thank me for the work and just, you know, really appreciated the office being in existence.
And I want to talk to you in a little bit about some of your reports and some of your investigations. And I'm guessing that part of your job as you were getting this department, this agency underway, is reaching out to county employees, letting them know you're there, and letting them know that they can trust you in order to come to you, because I'm guessing you get a fair number of your tips from county employees about waste, fraud, and abuse in the county.
Yeah, that's right. So it was a challenge, real, real challenge to start an agency that is compliance, right? We're certainly not the most popular people. You know, people don't want to necessarily be seen with us in the hallways. So you have to start an agency from scratch. You have to develop trust. You have to develop confidence in the employee being willing to take that olive branch to come out and talk with you. I like to say that our reports speak for themselves. We never name anyone. We're very consistent with we received complaints. We don't go into detail. Certainly there are county employees, current and former employees, that give us information. And that's a real leap of faith. So, you know, I think the work speaks for itself. 34 reports in, I don't know, gosh, 4 years, 5 years. Those are pretty significant numbers. But also, I think what the actual reports show. I mean, we don't have the time to look into or go into things on our own initiative. These reports start from a tip, an anonymous tip, a current employee, former employee, citizen. And our job is simply to gather the facts, analyze documents, conduct interviews, and write a finding of what we found.
Let's go back to the beginning now. Let's talk about 2018. Johnny Oshefsky was elected county executive. He ran as a progressive who was going to make Baltimore County government more transparent. And one of his promises was to establish an office of inspector general. You applied. You got the job. What attracted you to the position?
Well, it kind of checked a lot of boxes for me. I'm certainly a career public servant. Prior to coming and working for Baltimore County, I was an assistant state's attorney for Baltimore City for 11 years, and then I worked at the Office of the State Prosecutor for 4 years. I've certainly been attracted to trying to make things better. That's what public servants do. I really liked the idea of being able to start something from scratch, being able to put my fingerprints on it, you know, doing it right. I think my prior experience in being a prosecutor and my connections with various law enforcement agencies also was something that would help me, because when you're making something new, you have to have good partners. You have to have good colleagues to collaborate and work well together, you know, whether that's making referrals to the state's attorney's office or the U.S. attorney's office, or working with other administrative agencies to make referrals for various things. You need someone that has that, you know, kind of networking connection, which I certainly do. And you know, you're still a lawyer. You still have to interpret what the rule says, what the policy means. If you're going to accuse or you say someone's not following it, you know, you have to have all those lawyer skills, too. So it was just a really exciting opportunity that I just was thrilled to be appointed by the county executive, confirmed by county council, And then I just kind of been rolling up my sleeves, if you will, and digging into the work.
Very good. That's Kelly Madigan, Baltimore County's Inspector General. We'll have more with her after a quick break. It's midday. I'm John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall today. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm John Lee. Coming up Monday on Midday, Tom Hall is back in the host chair to talk to former Baltimore City Health Commissioner Lena Wynn about the latest public health news, plus Chris Lane of the Emanuel Choir. That's Monday, but today I'm talking to Baltimore County Inspector General Kelly Madigan. Whether Madigan will continue in her role is now an open question. Recently, Madigan was told she would need to reapply for her job. That was sparking backlash from supporters in the county. Matter of fact, Common Cause of Maryland released a statement on Wednesday calling for Madigan's immediate reappointment. You know, in covering your office during the Olszewski years, it seemed like the administration had a bit of a love-hate relationship with you. On one hand, the county executive was nothing but supportive of you and your work when speaking publicly. He also grew the size of your office, which, by the way, how many people do you have in your office now?
It's myself and five other employees.
Okay. But on the other hand, it was revealed that his chief of staff had sent emails to you that clearly were an attempt to make you less independent. Olszewski at one point proposed a politically appointed oversight board to keep tabs on you. He quickly withdrew that idea after a firestorm of criticism. And his county administrative officer, Stacy Rogers, at times aggressively took issue with some of your findings. Did you feel the administration was sending you mixed messages? And how, if so, how did you deal with that?
It's certainly hard. You know, it's hard not to take it personally. As the first inspector general, I think the first of anything is probably the hardest than all of the ones that come after you. It certainly was a difficult time because I was trying to follow the code. But I take a little bit of solace in the idea that I am not unique in that. There has been pushback any time you have a new inspector general. I can think of a couple of different examples across the states. But oversight is hard. Oversight is messy. Oversight can be tricky. But it's still really important. You know, you have to speak truth to power, which is, you know, I stand in my little size seven shoes and try to do that. But sometimes it's hard for that to be heard when it's never occurred before. Mm-hmm. So I just tried very hard to throw myself into the work. I tried to handle disagreements, you know, pleasantly. I tried to be professional and direct. I mean, the code's very clear that it says, you know, the right to have direct access to any and all of this documentation. It's not surprising that there would be challenges, that there would be disagreements. You know, it was certainly hard, but I think the office persevered. I mean, we survived both the bill over July of 2021, as well as, you know, the Blue Ribbon Commission. I was a brand new inspector general. I had served in the position for less than 2 years at that point. And the next thing I know, I'm the subject of a 10-month multiple public hearings studying me, studying the office, studying every decision I had made. People that felt that they were unfairly treated had the opportunity to complain to the Blue Ribbon Commission. They took all of this in and they weighed it all. And at the end of the day, they sided with the office. They said we were doing everything we were supposed to be doing. They proposed strengthening it, giving us additional staff, having recommendations. And we publicly accepted every recommendation that the Blue Ribbon Commission made. We also were peer reviewed by the Association of Inspector Generals. I actually applied for peer review early. I thought as a young office, one way to get credibility is to, you know, be part of a bigger association like the Association of Inspectors General. They have this peer review where members from other offices that don't know you will come in and will kind of open up the books and they'll review your policies, they'll review your cases, your closed complaints, how you're handling things. So I applied for that early. You have to be in existence for at least 3 years to even be eligible. And we passed peer review with flying colors. So again, that's just another way to kind of say it's really just about the office. It's not about me personally. I'm following the facts wherever they may lead, you know. But sometimes what we do is can be unpopular. That's the whole point of transparency. You know, it's the famous Supreme Court case that sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I think she touched on this, but is that something that comes with the territory for inspectors general, which is that there's sometimes maybe buyer's remorse? You know, it sounds good when you're running for office or you're an office holder and you say, we're going to have an inspector general who's going to be looking into waste, fraud, and abuse. And then you have an inspector general who's looking into waste, fraud, and abuse. And you start, maybe this wasn't such a great idea after all. It sounds like you're saying that's not an unusual thing to happen across the country.
It's not unusual, but right, I'm not a robot. I'm a real person. I have children. I have a husband. You know, I have an existence. I have a personal life. So it's hard to say that you can't take it personally because they're attacking or they're criticizing or critiquing this thing that you've built. That's why I tried to not make it necessarily about me. I tried to make it about the work of the office and that it was consistent with how every other office is run, right? This inspector general's office is no different than any other inspector general's office. We're following best practices from the Association of Inspector General. Every member of my team has been certified. They've gone to the week-long training course. It's a week and there's a 100-question exam at the end. To maintain those certifications, we have to earn continuing professional education credits. So all of those things to kind of, you know, lean back and to trust the process. But no, I mean, you're speaking truth to power. You're drafting reports that are identifying fraud, waste, employee misconduct. Those are not popular things. I knew that when I signed on for the job. You know, sometimes you're surprised at the critique you get or the blowback you get. But I think the mission of the office is very, very important, which is why I just have to lean in.
If you're just joining us, I'm John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall on Midday today. And my guest is Kelly Madigan, Baltimore County Inspector General. This show is pre-recorded, so we cannot take your calls or emails. When you started working there in 2020, How did you find the county? Where was it? I mean, I know for one thing, you had to, if I remember correctly, you were involved with bringing the ethics up to speed for county employees. I believe you met with all the county employees to talk about how the ethics rules and regulations that are or should be in place, which sounds very time consuming. And so you were doing that. You were getting this Office of Inspector General up. Before you came along, what was there to keep the county in check?
That's a good question. So, right, when I was hired initially in January of 2020, I had two full-time roles. I had both create this office that didn't exist from scratch. And you know, that's everything. Mm-hmm. That's finding space, getting a phone number, getting a logo, making a website, setting up a hotline. All of these things that you don't think about when you're creating something new, while also serving as the executive director of the Ethics Commission, which was already in existence. But I had two full-time jobs. So kind of the first 6 months, I focused on the Ethics Commission. I focused my energies on how could I improve this thing that was already in existence, whether that was when I first started, the financial disclosures were done by paper. They were hand-filled out and maintained in file cabinets. So I worked very closely with the Office of Information Technology to have those upgraded to an electronic system that not only could be maintained in electronic format, but that when you go and file another financial disclosure for the next year, that you can use your prior one and kind of refresh and update the information to make it simpler both for the filer as well as the person reviewing. But it was a lot of work. And, you know, the other challenge when I first started was there was no physical space for the office. You know, where are you going to create an office where you need employees and members of the public to feel comfortable to come in and tell you things, you know? Mm-hmm. The original space that was proposed was one office in a series of offices over in the human resources building over on Allegheny Avenue. And I said, this isn't going to work. You know, people aren't going to feel comfortable to come and tell me things. The tunnel was perfect. It's centrally located. It's off the beaten path.
Right. When we talk about the tunnel, and it is exactly what it sounds
like. It's
the
tunnel. Yes.
It's the tunnel that runs underneath the courthouse. It runs from the historic courthouse to the current court, right? Circuit court.
The tunnel, as I understand it, is the floor below the basement, and it connects the county office building, the historic courthouse, and the circuit court through an underground system so that you can kind of move between the buildings in the event of inclement weather.
So you're down there in the bunker.
We're down there in the bunker.
so people can come. But the idea is people can come see you, talk to you, and others won't see them doing that. It's kind of tucked away.
It's tucked away. It's private. It's confidential. Sure. It would be great to have a window because there's no windows in the tunnel. But I think in terms of the success of the office, it's important to be centrally located. It's important to be in a building where there would be lots of different reasons that you would be in. The people that sometimes come and speak with us, they're talking about sensitive information. They're afraid. They're scared. Maybe they're talking about a supervisor or a colleague. They don't want it to come back on them. Maybe they have information that the county's done something improper or money's been misspent. And they're not going to feel free to do that if you're on the first floor in a building with, you know, only one destination. So as much as it'd be wonderful to have some sunlight, I love the tunnel. I think it's a great spot.
Talking about corruption, Baltimore County, for better or for worse, right or wrong, has over the years has had a reputation for having a fair level of corruption in government. When you came in 2020 and you started having reports and investigations and such, would you concur with that? Did you find a county that had been compromised, that had areas of corruption in it?
That's a hard question. I don't know that I would say compromised. I think I think it's fair to say that Baltimore County was and still kind of is a fairly casual government, in that not everything is upgraded or current. Some agreements are not formalized. It's casual. But I think what I've also found is there are some, you know, great, amazing, hardworking employees who love nothing more than working for Baltimore County government. And those employees have been very grateful to the office for pointing out the ones that, you know, aren't necessarily following their own rules. So I don't know that I'm going to say corruption, but we certainly received a lot of complaints, and we, you know, every day, one complaint at a time, we vet the complaints, we look at everything we receive, and we just kind of slowly start to go about our business process. And I mean, it's very common that after we issue a report, we will receive complaints. Again, when you're first starting, nobody knows you necessarily exist. They don't know how to contact you. They're not really sure what you're doing. Oh, gosh, I heard about this inspector general's office, but are they really going to listen to my complaint? Is this really for them? What, are they going to do anything? So, you know, the reports kind of build on themselves, and that's what establishes the reputation. That's what establishes our credibility. I can't tell you how many people have said, well, I wasn't going to call, but I read this report, or I saw you did this thing. I saw your analysis on this thing, and I think I should call. And I think that's kind of evidence that the system is working. You know, how do you build an agency? How do you have 8,000 employees who've never met you, who don't know anything about you, take a leap of faith and trust you? I mean, it's little by little. It's over time. You have to build their trust. You have to build their respect, you know, develop that credibility that they're going to reach out to you.
This seems like a good point to, if anyone's listening and thinks, I have something for her, how would they get in touch with you?
That's a great question. There's a couple different ways to get in touch with us. You can certainly call the office, 410-887-6500. You can send us an email, inspectorgeneral@baltimorecounty.md.gov. you can go online to our website and fill out a complaint. But pick up the phone. We'd love to hear from you. We do answer the phone. And if you call and leave a message, we will call you back. And it's just as important to us if it's not a matter that falls within our jurisdiction, right? It has to be fraud, waste, misconduct, accountability, efficiency, integrity for Baltimore County government. We'll get you to the right spot.
That's Kelly Madigan, Inspector General in Baltimore County. She stays with us on the other side of a quick break. I'm WYPR Baltimore County reporter John Lee, filling in for Tom Hall here on Midday. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm WYPR reporter John Lee, filling in for Tom Hall today. If you just joined us, we're talking to Baltimore County Inspector General Kelly Madigan. Madigan is the first Inspector General for Baltimore County, serving in the role since the office's inception in January of 2020. She joins me here in studio. And Kelly, let's talk about some of your investigations. You have called out Councilman Julian Jones, a Democrat, in two reports. In one instance, you tagged him because his official emails included a donate button for his campaign. In another, you said Jones helped to pave the way for a commercial alley to be repaired by the county. He has questioned the validity of those investigations. And then in December of 2023, Jones tried to create an advisory board to oversee you. Jones said that proposal, that, by the way, went nowhere in the county council, was not because of those two reports. He says everyone needs a watchdog, including the watchdog, the inspector general. Is that true? Would you agree with him on that? And so who or what is your watchdog?
Well, I love this question because there are like so many different answers. Inspector generals are independent, so in theory, they don't have a technical boss, right? But there are protections in the code. You can only serve two terms. You can be removed for cause for a variety of reasons. But we report, you know, directly to the taxpayers and the administration and the council. So if we get something wrong in our reports, the administration and the council would be the first people to let us know. So this whole, like, who's watching the watchdog? I guess the technical answer is nobody and everybody all at the same time, right? The code says that we have to be peer reviewed by the Association of Inspector Generals every 3 to 5 years. The code says that we are required to issue these public reports to the administration and council. And, you know, so I think that the work is checked by a lot of different people. But do I have a technical boss? I don't. And that's the idea because that I'm supposed to be independent. The office is supposed to be independent. It's not supposed to report directly to the administration or the legislature, because that would... That kind of defeats the purpose of having oversight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, 2021 was an interesting year for you, to say the least. Councilman Jones and now former Councilwoman Kathy Bevins grilled you over your conduct in office, alleging you were intimidating county employees. Even the cost of your business cards was scrutinized. I have covered the county council for a number of years. Got to tell you, I'd never seen anything like it, that particular hearing.
Well, I had never been through anything like that before, so that makes two of us.
Okay. Bevins confirmed at the time that you had interviewed her campaign treasurer, Chris McCollum, as part of an investigation of the Baltimore County Agricultural Center, which he had headed. So do you think your treatment at that hearing was, in the end, just due to your investigation of McCollum?
I have a lot of things I could say about that budget hearing. I'll say this: I've never experienced anything like that before. The budget hearing was supposed to be for whether or not the office was going to receive $54,000 to hire an administrative assistant, and that budget hearing, which was supposed to be 30 minutes, turned into 2.5 hours, where I was questioned about everything except the $54,000 request to have an administrative assistant. I certainly think that there's resistance to these investigations. There's resistance to the reports. I can tell you, though, every single report, and I reviewed all of them in anticipation of coming on today and talking about them, they originated with a complaint. we don't sit down and target, oh, I'm going to do a report about this person. I'm going to see if I can do something on that. We receive complaints. The office is reactive in the sense that 97% of what we do is somebody tells us something. They give us a tip. They say, look into this. And we follow the facts wherever they may lead. I don't wake up on a Monday and say, I'm going to do a report on this council person, or I want to do a report on this thing. Now, the statute says on our own, we can look into things, but we have been so busy with just what is coming in through the door, the phone, the email on an everyday basis, that it's very, very rare that we actually look into something on our own initiative. But yeah, you know, the oversight is tricky. It's not popular by the person that's being overseen. I think the most important thing, and we can talk about these reports, but these 34 reports, whatever the topic of them was, they would have never seen the light of day without an inspector general's office. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an office of the auditor, but I don't know that any of these reports would fall within their jurisdiction. So instances of employee misconduct, instances of Baltimore County wasting money, spending money on things that were never used, vendors committing fraud, counties, agencies not following their own policies and procedures, those reports without an inspector general's office would never see the light of day.
You know, then later in 2021, you investigated Bevins herself. You found that she had violated the county charter by moving out of her district. And you noted at the time that there's no mechanism for enforcing that violation, and you recommended that the county change that, but that has not happened. So that kind of begs the question, what is the fate of most of your recommendations? I've read your reports. I think you always have recommendations at the end of what the county could do. Are you seeing the county taking those recommendations and running with them or not, or a mixed bag?
No, we actually are. And that's one of my favorite points of the reports, that the statute says we can make recommendations. So, you know, we write our reports. They're factual in nature. There's no bias. It's not my opinion. It's what the facts show. We analyzed these documents. We interviewed these people. And so that's only half of it, right? Identifying the issue, that's part of oversight. Again, with this theory that sunlight is the best disinfectant, by saying that this person committed misconduct, they misused their county vehicle, they misused their county email, whatever the allegation is, that person's not named, because from my perspective, it's more about the conduct that's happening and trying to remedy that conduct. So you have the first part of the report, which is the factual basis. We got the complaint. We did this investigation. This is what we found. But the recommendations are the ways to make Baltimore County government better, to improve it, make it more accountable, more efficient. And I think we've had over 100 recommendations, and every year I have a requirement to do an annual report that talks about all the work of the office, and I compile and update all of the recommendations. Last year's annual report, it's something like over 80% of the recommendations are in fact implemented. Mm-hmm. Because once we make a recommendation, for example, that one that you just referenced is one that hasn't been implemented, but that was from 2021, we'll go back a year or two later and send email updates or ask for an official reporting back on whether or not that recommendation has taken effect. For example, we did a couple reports about the Department of Public Works and Transportation, updating policies and procedures and doing some things to kind of make their policies stronger. And they said in their response, you know, this is going to be implemented in 6, 8, 9 months. Well, the office will go back and after 6, 8, 9 months and follow up with them to make sure that they have, in fact, implemented that recommendation, because, you know, that's just as important as issuing the report is doing the follow up. You know, that's accountability, not just for the office, but for the administration or county council.
But if you do that and the recommendations haven't happened, it's not like you can order them to do it. You really it's a recommendation is what it is.
It's a recommendation. Sometimes, you know, that's worth talking about, because there's this idea that inspector generals, who's watching the watchdog, and, you know, they don't report to anybody, or they can write these reports. Like, that's just not true. You know, we write the report. The report isn't public until we receive a response from the administration or council. But all I can do is make a recommendation. Mm-hmm. We're not instrumental in hiring or firing or discipline. We can't make somebody do something. We can't make them take our recommendations. It's the idea that, again, we're bringing this issue to the attention of the stakeholders, and it's up to them whether they choose to, you know, hire, fire, make changes, and or take up the recommendation.
You know, late last year, you issued a report that cleared then county executive Johnny Olszewski for a payment made to a retired firefighter whose brother is a friend of Olszewski's. Now, briefly, what was that case about, and why did you decide? Why did you decide to clear him? I guess he didn't do anything. But what was the case about?
Well, that case was really five reports in one. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very lengthy report. There was an allegation that Baltimore County had made an improper payment. There was an allegation that Baltimore County broke some laws by failing to put the correct name in a ledger for payments to county council. There were allegations that we were wasting money or spending too much money to have the Public Information Act piece of that case be litigated. And then there was an allegation about procurement of some trucks. I mean, the office received several complaints about those underlying facts. And the reason that we did the report is that the complaint addressed fraud, waste, misconduct. You know, it was appropriate for us to do the report. We don't get to pick how the report, what the conclusion is going to be. You know, it's not like you start the story with the conclusion and then you work backwards. You follow the facts wherever they may lead. We certainly made a variety of findings. We found that there was no improper conduct that occurred, but we certainly said that mistakes were made along the way, and we went into detail about those mistakes. We also did an accounting of all the money that had been spent during the Public Information Act litigation. That's another kind of thing that's been really important to me as a new IG, and especially starting a new office. It's not this idea that just believe what I say because I say it. It's been very important to me to always attach all of the exhibits, whether they're the emails, whether they're the actual bills, whether it's the procurement documents, because I think that when you read the reports and you actually see the documents that are attached, and I certainly know that the reports can be lengthy, and I can understand why somebody doesn't want to read, you know, 130 pages, a 16-page report with, you know, 100 pages of exhibits. But I think that's very important for the Baltimore County taxpayers and citizens to know and be aware of what the underlying documents are. Again, it's just further proof of what the report shows, the conclusions, but that's also just, you know, you don't have to believe me because I'm saying it. The documents are right there attached.
So if you're just joining us, I'm John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall on Midday Today. My guest today is Kelly Madigan, Baltimore County Inspector General. This show was pre-recorded, so we can't take your calls or emails. We've been talking about the report involving the county executive, a couple involving Councilman Jones, but, you know, a lot of your reports are about, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, about county employees who, one way or the other, they're ripping off the county. A few examples, someone who was running a real estate appraisal business while on county time. Then there was a Bureau of Highways employee who was committing time and attendance fraud. Personal favorite of mine last year, your office discovered photos of a freshly paved driveway on Facebook that you said helped you to confirm that employee swiped the asphalt from the county. Can you put a dollar amount on how much you have saved the county in these waste and fraud investigations? Is that a doable thing?
It is and it isn't. I'm going to try to do it in two different ways. There are certainly reports that we say, you know, $36,000 in misconduct, whether it's a unauthorized procurement card purchases or $70,000 to pave an alley. You know, there are reports that have those dollar figures with it. Some of the reports are hard to attach a realistic number. We did a report with the city OIG about the water system and the waste. And, You know, we conservatively said millions, and that's because, you know, there was 8,000 open tickets and there were these broken meters. But the other statistic that I think is just as compelling as, you know, you saved 3.5 million or whatever number you're going to save is what the return on the investment is for the Baltimore County citizen to fund the office. So when the office was first started, the budget was $290,000 for fiscal year 21. And we took that number and we divided it by the population of Baltimore County, which was 35 cents. So it costs a county resident 35 cents to run the office. In exchange for that 35 cent investment, these are the reports that they got. So I can certainly point to, you know, we've had a couple recent reports involving trash, one of which we had a conservative estimate that a trash hauler conservatively owed the county $224,000. We had one where we've had late fees that the county's paid for late Easy Pass payments of $17,000. We had another one where we found a vendor that had two separate accounts was choosing to dispose waste under the cheaper account, which was approximately $37,000. We had our last report was one about a PPP fraud during the COVID-19. And, you know, I can say that that's $41,000. But more importantly, I can say that these reports wouldn't have existed without the office, and that as of the last fiscal year, it costs somewhere around 75 cents for each county resident to run the office, which is the equivalent of roughly three gumballs from a 25-cent gumball machine.
Well, unfortunately, we only have about a minute left, and I want to ask you what's kind of a bigger picture question, which is that what is the state of inspectors general in this country? I mean, soon after taking office, the president fired 17 inspectors general. Do you and your colleagues feel more threatened now than in the past, local and nationally, I suppose?
I think that was certainly upsetting to be an inspector general and to see that occurred on the federal level. I think for the most part, inspector generals they tend to be respected in state and local governments. It's certainly a very difficult job. On any given day, you can receive a complaint about someone. So it's certainly a job where you feel like you don't necessarily have a lot of friends. You can't be friendly. You have to maintain your independence, knowing that, you know, any given day you can get a complaint through the door. But I think oversight is very important. And I think that accountability in government is very important. Trust in government, whether it's local government, state government, federal government, is pretty low. I mean, they've done a lot of reporting on that on a national and local level about what the trust of government is. But there has been an overwhelming amount of support for the Baltimore County Office of the Inspector General. I continue to be overwhelmed by the public response and the support that the office has received. I think it was last December when they added to, sorry, it was last November in the election when the ballot question was whether or not the Inspector General's office should be moved to the charter. I mean, that was voted somewhere around 88%. I mean, it was incredibly high. And so while I think that the job is very difficult, it can be challenging. It's not necessarily a popular job. You have to be willing to do the right thing even when nobody's looking. You have to really, you know, follow your moral compass and follow the facts wherever they may lead, no matter how unpopular that will be. I think there is a general hunger right now for accountability in government, which is what inspector generals provide.
Kelly Madigan is the Inspector General for Baltimore County. That's it for us today. Coming up on Monday on Midday, Tom Hall's back in the host chair to talk public health news with former Baltimore City Health Commissioner Lena Nguyen. I'm WIPR's Baltimore County reporter John Lee, sitting in for Tom Hall on Midday today. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.